The headlines. Israel threatens to intensify its attacks on the Gaza Strip as the death toll from its strikes on the besieged enclave rises to 56. The Israeli army says Palestinians have fired more than 1,000 rockets towards Israel since Monday evening. And Iran says the resumption of the voluntary implementation of additional protocol by Tehran depends on the removal of U.S. sanctions. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. 21 more Gazans have lost their lives as Israel intensifies its aerial strikes in the besieged Palestinian coastal strip. The Israeli military says that it has pounded 500 targets in Gaza. Gaza's health ministry says 56 Palestinians, including 14 children and 5 women, have been killed since Monday. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says several of its top commanders were among those killed on Wednesday. Hamas has retaliated by firing hundreds of rockets toward Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv. The Israeli military has confirmed the death of one of its soldiers by anti-tank missile. The U.S. energy corporation Chevron says that it has shut down a natural gas platform off the Israeli coast. This after an energy pipeline was hit near Ashkelon. Israeli medics say that 6 people have been killed so far. Meanwhile, Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniya says the resistance front will remain steadfast in its fight against Israeli crimes.
If they want to escalate, the resistance is ready. If they want to stop, the resistance is ready. If they want to move their hand out of Jerusalem al-Quds, the resistance is ready. This is the message that we deliver to all the sides and to whoever is involved.
Haniya said Palestinians will never leave al-Quds alone and will continue to fight to protect the holy city from Israeli forces. Meanwhile, Israel's Minister of Military Affairs has vowed more attacks on the Gaza Strip to bring, quote, total long-term quiet before any truce. Benny Gantz was visiting the southern city of Ashkelon, which has been hit by a barrage of Palestinian rockets. The Israeli military says over 1,000 rockets have been fired from Gaza since Monday. Ashraf Shannon is our correspondent joining us from Gaza City to tell us about the current developments there. Ashraf, what are we looking at in terms of what is going on? Have we seen any attacks by Israel at this point?
Yes, Israel continues to pound areas in the Gaza Strip. So far, the Israeli onslaught has led to the killing of 56 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including 14 children, 5 women, and an elderly man, and the injury of hundreds others. As well as the destruction of several buildings in the Gaza Strip. Israel has also warned the residential and office towers that they will soon be bombed. When something like this happened yesterday, the resistance factions fired hundreds of rockets towards the Israeli regime. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance groups continue to fire retaliatory rockets towards the Israeli regime, as well as mortars at Israeli military posts in the east of the besieged enclave. Part of the strategy is also to fire rockets towards the Tamar natural gas platform off the coast of Ashkelon, northwest of the Gaza Strip, as they did yesterday when they hit a huge oil reservoir in the north of the enclave as well.
You know, when you had the Israel's Minister of Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, visiting Ashkelon, he said that, and I'm going to quote him, vowing more attacks to, quote, total long-term quiet before any truce. What types of reactions has that had in the Gaza Strip, especially from the Palestinian factions?
Well, the only reactions the Palestinian factions have made was through the spokesman person of the Islamic Jihad's military wing, the Al-Quds Brigades, Abu Hamza. He made the statement while mourning the death of three top military commanders of Hamas's military wing, and he said that the resistance factions in Gaza are prepared for this battle to last for months. And I believe this is a strong statement, a reaction to Gaza's threats against the Gaza Strip.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Ashraf Shannon from Gaza City. Many thanks. Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters across the West Bank amid escalating tensions in the occupied territories. In Ramallah, Israeli troops fired tear gas to disperse the Palestinian protesters who hurled rocks and burnt fires. One Palestinian was killed in the clashes. Similar clashes happened in Nablus and several other cities across the occupied land. At least three people have so far been killed. The unrest comes as Israel is pushing ahead with a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds. The tensions escalated after Israeli troops launched a crackdown against Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque on Friday, which marked International Al-Quds Day. Palestinian writer and activist Jafar Aramini says Israel is committing crimes in the West Bank and Gaza with impunity.
If you're listening to the rhetorics coming out of Tel Aviv, Netanyahu, his minister of defense, his chief of security,
yes.
They're all threatening, and they say, we've just started. You see, they've got a taste for our blood, and when they have a lick, they want to drink. And as you said, 35 Palestinians killed. 12 of them are children. Why? Because Israel can do it with impunity. Mr. Macron of France asked Israel to take it easy when they're attacking Gaza. Not to stop, but to use proportionate force, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call proportionate, Mr. Macron? They have flattened Gaza 3 times in the last 10 years, and they're about to do the same.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani has condemned Israeli violence against Palestinians in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. Rouhani described the incidents at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the fasting month of Ramadan as bitter and ominous. He voiced Iran's support for Palestinians, urging them to keep up their resistance. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, made similar remarks and hailed what he called the resistance of the Palestinian revolutionary youth. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif also slammed the Israeli violence.
The criminal actions of the Zionist regime that have intensified since the International Quds Day and the unprecedented events in the Al-Aqsa Mosque and in the occupied territories, as well as bombardment of Gaza, have created critical conditions in the region.
Zarif made the remarks upon his arrival to Syria for meetings with the country's officials over the latest developments in the region. Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal al-Maqdad also denounced what he called Israel's bloody acts. The office of Iraq's top Shia cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, expressed strong support for the heroic resistance of the Palestinian nation. The United Nations, the Arab League, the African Union, and a group of other international organizations also reacted to the rising escalation of violence in Jerusalem al-Quds and the Gaza Strip. Yemenis have launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance. The campaign comes amid the escalated tensions between Palestinians and Israel in the occupied territories. Abdul Latif al-Wushali reports from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a.
Yemenis have launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance and its armed struggle against the Israeli aggression.
There is no difference between our battle in Yemen and the battle of our Palestinian brothers in the occupied territories against Israeli aggression. What happens in Palestine, Yemen, and Syria amounts to a conspiracy hatched by America, Britain, and Israel. So we should stand by each other under any condition.
Meanwhile, Yemen's Supreme Political Council held a press conference in which it denounced the Israeli planned forced expulsions of dozens of Palestinian families from their homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in Jerusalem al-Quds. It called on the Arab regimes to take real actions against the Israeli moves.
We congratulate our Palestinian brothers on their heroic operations against the Zionists. We believe that armed struggle is the only available option for Palestinians to regain their usurped lands. What was taken by force can only be retrieved by force. We also call on the Muslim world to prepare for the upcoming liberation battle.
Earlier, the leader of Yemen's Houthi Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, had urged all Yemenis to fully support the oppressed people of Palestine. Yemen would work to raise money, he said, and will get prepared for any new development.
As Israeli violations of international law continue, Yemenis are more and more vocal in expressing solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. They say they will fight alongside the Palestinians against the aggression. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
People have rallied in several cities across the world to condemn Israel's crackdown on Palestinian protesters in the West Bank and its aggression against the Gaza Strip.
Israel!
in solidarity with the people of Palestine, who are obviously under brutal subjugation from the occupation and the pointless acts of terrorism perpetrated by the Israeli military.
In New York City, thousands of protesters gathered outside of the Israeli consulate. A similar gathering was held outside of the U.S. State Department in support of Palestinians. The protesters condemned Washington's silence on Israeli crimes. Meanwhile, protesters in the Turkish city of Istanbul held a rally in front of the Israeli consulate for a third night in a row. They called on Ankara to sever ties with Tel Aviv. In Kuwait City, demonstrators voiced their solidarity with beleaguered people in the Gaza Strip and against the eviction of Palestinians from their homes in a Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood. Marchers in central London called for an end to Israeli atrocities against Palestinians.
In the wake of the Israeli regime's attacks on Jerusalem Al-Quds, pro-Palestinian demonstrators took over Downing Street in the British capital, London. The demonstrators even managed to clear out a small group of pro-Zionist demonstrators and chanted in solidarity with the Palestinian uprising against the occupation, sending a strong message of international solidarity.
Outrage is what's being voiced here on the streets of London today after Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem Al-Quds, as well as the attacks and the eviction of Palestinians from their homes in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. On top of that as well, of course, people are voicing their frustration and condemnation of the British silence over the massacres committed in the Gaza Strip.
Now they're attacking the Gaza Strip as well. They're attacking the Al-Aqsa Mosque at a time when, in the middle of Ramadan, at the most holy time for the Muslim people. This is an acceleration of the general attacks on the Palestinians, and it's completely unacceptable.
Since 1917, the British government has supported the Zionist project in Palestine, the settler colonial project that expelled the Arab Palestinians from their land, and which to this day continues to deny them their basic human rights. And today, now we see Israel is continuing this and ramping it up and is now trying to expel people from Jerusalem, from East Jerusalem, which is occupied by Israel illegally.
Demonstrators also expressed their outrage over Britain's allowing for the production of weapons to be used by the Israeli military and the UK's historic support for Israel. With the Gaza Strip under bombardment as the armed resistance fires rockets at Israel, the Palestinian people rise up throughout the occupied territories. This is whilst the international solidarity seems to now be stronger than ever. Robert and Lakesh, London.
Iran's top negotiator in Vienna talks on the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal has reiterated that Tehran will return to compliance with the accord only if U.S. sanctions are removed in a verifiable manner. Abbas Araghchi also said that the resumption of the voluntary implementation of additional protocol by Iran depends on the U.S. sanctions removal. In February, Iran halted its voluntary implementation of the additional protocol that allowed the International Atomic Energy Agency to carry out short-notice inspections at nuclear sites. Iran and the remaining signatories of the nuclear accord have been engaged in talks in the Austrian capital since early April. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran is also present in Vienna, but there will be no talks between him and the Iranian team. Tehran has already warned that it will walk out of the talks if it finds them long and drawn out.
Iran and the remaining signatories to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action are continuing their talks in Vienna to save the nuclear agreement nearly 3 years after Washington's unilateral withdrawal in 2018. Press TV has learned that the United States is complicating the negotiations by insisting on keeping in place 500 anti-Iran sanctions, including in the 2015 nuclear deal, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. Informed sources say if kept in place, the sanctions on these 500 individuals and entities will prevent Iran from doing business with the rest of the world, which is in violation of Article 29 of the agreement. This is while Tehran has time and again reiterated that Washington has to take the first step towards reviving the nuclear deal by unconditionally removing all sanctions in a verifiable manner.
It has been the United States who left the JCPOA, who withdrew from the JCPOA. It is the United States who should come first, who should implement its obligations and lift all of its sanctions. And then Iran would verify, and after upon verification, Iran would restart its obligations in the JCPOA.
Tehran has also reiterated its calls that the United States has to remove not some, but all sanctions on the Islamic Republic.
Well, our position is quite clear. All sanctions should be lifted. All sanctions which are mentioned in the JCPOA, and any new sanctions imposed after the adoption day of the JCPOA, including everything during Trump administration. This is our position, it's quite clear, and we are working to come to a conclusion which meet our demands on the sanctions lifting area.
The comments by Araghchi comes as the JCPOA has been in disarray since May 2018, when former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the deal and reimposed the anti-Iran sanctions that the JCPOA had removed. The Trump administration has also placed additional sanctions on Iran under other pretexts not related to Iran's nuclear energy program as part of its maximum pressure campaign.
The second day of registration for the potential candidates for Iran's upcoming presidential election is underway. The registration kicked off at the Interior Ministry building on Tuesday and will run until Saturday. Former President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and ex-oil minister Rostam Qasami were the most prominent figures to register on Wednesday. A series of other notable officials have so far handed over their documents at the ministry building. Those names include Saeed Mohammad, who previously served as the commander of a major construction base, and Hossein Dehghan, the former defense minister of President Hassan Rouhani's cabinet. Iranians will go to the polls on the 18th of June to choose a successor to the incumbent Rouhani. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration gives lip service to a negotiated settlement, but Washington has done nothing at all to prevent the gradual colonization of the Palestinian West Bank, says Juan Kohlreiter in an article titled, "Resupporting Trump's Move of the U.S. Embassy to Al-Quds, Biden Enabled Israeli Ethnic Cleansing of Palestinians." Stay tuned for more. The Zionist regime has approved 450 housing units in Har Homa district in the east of Al-Quds. The planning of more and more squatter settlements on land owned by Palestinian families is among the actions that produced massive unrest in Al-Quds recently. In particular, the Israeli regime plan to make dozens of families homeless in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has raised tensions to a fever pitch. The Israeli regime pretends not to recognize the property titles of many families there and prevents them from making additions to their homes. When they do so anyway, the Israelis schedule them for demolition. This behavior is among the reasons that Human Rights Watch has just branded the fake regime of Israel as an apartheid regime. There were further Palestinian protests recently in Al-Quds, as far-right wing groups, the Israeli equivalent of QAnon, planned to parade through Palestinian neighborhoods, waving Israeli regime flags, just to make it clear who is in control of people's lives there. Palestinians are not allowed to protest, and the Israeli commandos come in to break heads and throw stun grenades. For a Palestinian who wave a Palestinian flag, this is a crime that could result in long years in jail. This is what the U.S. press calls clashes and skirmishes, managing to avoid naming Israeli regime repression. Since the Israeli regime is unimpeded in building throughout the West Bank, 60% of which is under direct Israeli regime military occupation, and 40% of which is under indirect Israeli regime military occupation, no two-state solution has been plausible for at least a decade, and maybe more. Speaking of two states that can never materialize is just a way of, in Mitt Romney's words, kicking the can down the road. So the new construction in Palestinian East Al-Quds was denounced by Washington, but the denunciation is toothless. Netanyahu knows that it is toothless and engaged in one of his favorite sports, owning the libs in Washington. Al-Quds, he said, is not a settlement, it is the capital of Israel, he claimed. The Biden administration says that the ultimate disposition of East Al-Quds is a matter for final status negotiations between Israel and Palestinians. But Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken don't have a leg to stand on in rejecting Netanyahu's position, since they decided to ratify the decision of the odious Trump to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. Only a handful of countries has agreed to recognize undivided Al-Quds as the Israeli regime's capital, a recognition that forestalls final stall negotiations. Trump symbolically acquiesced in Netanyahu's claims. Biden let the symbolism stand. Although Israelis often attempt to use the 1947 UN General Assembly partition plan as a charter of legitimacy, it isn't. It was never ratified by the UN executive branch, which is the Security Council, and so has no force of law. Moreover, Israeli regime leaders such as Ben-Gurion only paid lip service to it, ignoring it when they could seize further territory by main force. But even that very pro-Zionist 1947 plan did not award Al-Quds to Israeli regime, the city given its importance to Jews, Christians and Muslims, was to be under an international regime. But in 1948 war, the Zionist regime captured the west of the city, while Jordanian troops held the east. The Israelis annexed East Al-Quds and other Palestinian West Bank territory, which is an egregious violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids the acquisition of territory by military force. The Zionist regime is a signatory. Then, the Zionist regime began flooding Israeli squatters onto Palestinian land in East Al-Quds. This transfer of population from the occupying power to militarily occupied territory is a severe violation of 1949 Geneva Convention on the Treatment of Occupied Populations. The Fourth Geneva Convention was aimed at preventing a repeat of Axis war crimes, as with the attempts of the Nazis to settle occupied Poland with ethnic Germans and to ethnically cleanse Poles from their own country to make way for Germanization. Today, 370,000 Palestinians live in East Al-Quds, and the Israelis have managed to plant over 200,000 Israelis in squatter settlements on land owned by Palestinians. The goal of the Israeli regime, right, is to evict the Palestinians slowly and gradually so as to avoid a backlash from the rest of the world and to replace them with Israeli settlers so as to create a monochrome Israeli outlaws. Currently, the Palestinian neighborhoods in East Al-Quds are being turned into cantons surrounded by Israeli squatter settlements and sometimes cut off from other Palestinians, and they are all heavily surveilled and patrolled by Israeli regime forces. The Biden administration gives lip service to a negotiated settlement, but Washington has done nothing at all to prevent the gradual colonization of the Palestinian West Bank, including East Al-Quds, by Israelis over the past 54 years, and so we'll just go only sending over memos.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now I invite you to listen to the speech of Sheikh Muhammad Baig.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum everyone. Tonight, the topic is going to be Eid al-Fitr, the night of the Eid and the day of the Eid. Rasulullah, in showing the importance of Eid al-Fitr, spoke these words and said, فَإِذَا كَانَتْ لَيْلَةُ الْفِطْرِ, when the night of Eid al-Fitr comes, meaning the night before the day of Eid al-Fitr, which is going to be tonight, when it comes, وَهِيَ تُسَمَّى لَيْلَةُ الْجَوَائِزِ, this is called, Allah and the angels and all the divine beings call it Laylatul Jawa'iz. Jawa'iz means prizes, gifts. When you get Ja'izeh means gifts, prizes. So this is the night of gift giving. This is the night of gifts and the day of gifts. The other name for Laylatul Fitr is Laylatul Jawa'iz, the night of gifts. أَعْطَ اللَّهُ الْعَامِلِينَ أَجْرَهُمْ, Allah is the one who's giving the ones who have done good deeds their reward, their ajr. Tonight, Allah is distributing the ajr and the reward for the good that has been done through the month of Ramadan. This is the night He is giving out those rewards to everyone. بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ, without any limits. Meaning that Allah has no limits in His giving. And when He gives, it's a lot. This is the words of Rasulullah regarding the day of Eid. He says that when the day of Eid al-Fitr comes, when the morning comes on Eid al-Fitr, Allah appoints angels in every city, in every population. Allah appoints angels who come down to the earth and stand at the face, on the face of all the people who have fasted, done good, and observed the month of Ramadan, فَيَقُولُونَ, and they tell them, and these angels, they keep announcing to them, يَا أُمَّةَ مُحَمَّدٍ, O nation of Muhammad, go towards your generous God, go towards the generous Lord, that who is going to give you your reward, وَيَغْفِرُ الْأَذِيمُ, and a great forgiveness. Angels are announcing to us as we wake up in the morning. Tomorrow morning, if a person could listen and have the ears to listen to the realm of Ghaib, they will be listening to announcements of the angels that are telling them, go towards that generous Lord who's waiting with your gifts and a great forgiveness for you. And when these people, they leave their homes to go to the Musalla, to the place of prayer, their Eid prayer, Allah tells His angels, what is the reward of the person who has done good deeds and observed this month? What is the reward of that? So the angels say, their reward is Allah and His Messenger. That is their reward. He says, their reward is that it should be given completely. There should be nothing left out. Everything that they have done in the month of Ramadan, everything, small little actions that you have done, everything is being accounted for and everything is going to be given to you completely. Not one thing is going to be forgotten. That should be the reward, that they should be rewarded completely. So Allah says, I make you witnesses, O my angels. I make you witnesses. Inni qad ja'altu thawabahum an siyamihim shahra Ramadan. I have made the reward for them for the fasting of the month of Ramadan. I make you the witness to know that when I'm giving them the reward, let me tell you their reward. I have made the reward of their fasting in the month of Ramadan and their standing up for prayers and all the things that they have done in the month of Ramadan. What is their reward? Two things. He says, Ridai wa maghfirati, my pleasure and my forgiveness. That is their reward. I have written their reward down to them as my ridha, means my pleasure. I am pleased with them. That is one. And my maghfira, my forgiveness, they are forgiven. He says that, I swear by my honor, I swear by my honor that as long as these people who observe the month of Ramadan, if they keep fearing me and if they keep me in their heart and in their mind, as long as I exist there just like they did in the month of Ramadan, just like they observed the month of Ramadan with that respect that they had, as long as they respect me, they will never be away from my refuge. I will always be embracing them. I will never let go of them. And no one from the hellfire is ever going to have any sway and anything to do with these people. These are my people that I'm embracing. Allah is saying, this is what you are getting in the month of Ramadan. And this is on Eid al-Fitr. He says, so now, after you pray, when the prayer is done, he says, go back. Go back, knowing that you have been forgiven. Know that. And when you pray that Eid prayer tomorrow and go back, Rasulullah is saying, go back. Know that you have been forgiven. Do not even doubt that everything has been forgiven. You now have a clean slate. I am pleased with you. I am pleased with you, and you are pleased with me. That's it. I have given you your reward. I've done this. Allah is saying that. So when we are here in that day, we are getting another chance, a clean slate to start over again. And Allah is saying, as long as you keep on doing it now, you got a clean slate with all the knowledge that you have, and the experience that you have, And now you have a chance now. You have a chance to be great again. Truly, this is an Eid that we need to take advantage of. And every Eid is important, because Eid is something that comes from Allah's blessing. Truly, it is going to be there. And that's why Allah wanted everyone to enhance the Eid, make it greater, make it bigger. May all of you have a great Eid, and inshallah, Allah accepts all your actions and rewards you in the best way possible. Thank you again, and may Allah bless you all.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimul Halim Hakimun Mateen. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
It is hard to avoid the conclusion that the Joe Biden administration's fiscal irresponsibility arises from a cynical political calculation. It evidently proposes to employ the federal budget as a slush fund to distribute benefits to various political constituencies, gambling that the avalanche of new debt will not cause a financial crisis before the 2022 congressional elections. We now present you an article written by David P. Goldman, president of Macro Strategy LLC and senior writer at Law and Liberty. The piece is titled U.S. Fiscal Profligacy and the Impending Crisis. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. Massive demand-side stimulus combined with the constraints on the supply side in the form of higher taxes is a sure recipe for inflation and eventual recession. According to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, the fiscal year 2021 U.S. budget deficit will amount to 15% of America's GDP, or gross domestic product, after the passage of an additional $1.9 trillion in demand stimulus, a proportion that the United States has not seen since the Second World War. It is hard to avoid the conclusion that the Biden administration's fiscal irresponsibility arises from a cynical political calculation. It evidently proposes to employ the federal budget as a slush fund to distribute benefits to various political constituencies, gambling that the avalanche of new debt will not cause a financial crisis before the 2022 congressional elections. The additional $2.3 trillion in so-called infrastructure spending that the Biden administration has proposed consists mainly of handouts to Democratic constituencies. During the 12 months ending in March, the deficit stood at 19% of gross domestic product, or GDP. Even worse, the Federal Reserve absorbed virtually all the increase in outstanding debt on its balance sheet. In the aftermath of the 2009 recession, when the deficit briefly rose to 10% of the gross domestic product GDP, foreigners bought about half of the total new issuance of Treasury debt. During the past 12 months, foreigners have been net sellers of U.S. government debt. The U.S. dollar's role as the world's principal reserve currency is eroding fast, and fiscal irresponsibility of this order threatens to accelerate the dollar's decline. The U.S. Federal Reserve has kept short-term interest rates low by monetizing debt, but long-term Treasury yields have risen by more than a percentage point since last July. Markets know that what can't go on forever won't. At some point, private holders of U.S. Treasury debt will liquidate their holdings, as foreigners have begun to do, and rates will rise sharply. For every percentage point increase in the cost of financing federal debt, the U.S. Treasury will have to pay an additional $250 billion in interest. The United States well may find itself in the position of Italy in 2018, but without the rich members of the European Union to bail it out. The flood of federal spending has had a number of dangerous effects already. The U.S. trade deficit in goods as of February 2021 reached an annualized rate of more than $1 trillion a year, an all-time record. China's exports to the United States over the past 12 months, ending in February, also reached an all-time record. Federal stimulus created demand that the U.S. productive facilities could not meet and produced a massive import boom. According to Philadelphia Federal Reserve Survey, input prices to U.S. manufacturers in February rose at the fastest rate since 1973, and the gap between input prices and finished goods prices rose at the fastest rate since 2009. The Producer Price Index, PPI, for final demand rose at an annualized 11% rate during the first quarter of this year. The Consumer Price Index, CPI, shows year-on-year growth of only 1.7%, but that reflects dodgy measurements. For example, the price shelter, which comprises a third of the index, supposedly rose just 1.5% over the year, although home prices rose by as much as 10%. If foreigners are net sellers of U.S. Treasury securities, how is the United States financing an external deficit in the range of $1 trillion a year? The United States has two deficits to finance, the internal budget deficit and the balance of payment deficit, and here we refer to this second deficit. The answer is, according to the Treasury data, by selling stocks to foreigners. According to the Treasury International Capital, or TIC system, foreign investors have been dumping low-yielding US Treasuries and corporate bonds during the past year. Foreign investors bought $400 billion of US equities and nearly $500 billion of US agency securities backed by home mortgages during the 12 months through to January, but sold $600 billion of treasuries and $100 billion of corporate bonds. This is a bubble on top of a bubble. The US Federal Reserve buys $4 trillion of treasury securities and pushes the after-inflation yield below zero. That pushes investors into stocks. Foreigners don't want US treasuries at negative real yields, but they buy into the stock market, which keeps rising, because the US Federal Reserve is pushing down bond yields and so forth. Today, however, the US Treasury market is the weak link in the financial system, supported only by the central bank's monetization of debt. If the extreme fiscal profligacy of the Biden administration prompts private investors to exit the Treasury market, there will be no safe assets left in dollar financial markets. The knock-on effects would be extremely hard to control. The overwhelming majority of the over-the-counter privately traded derivatives contracts serve as interest rate hedges. Market participants typically pledge Treasury securities as collateral for those contracts. According to the Bank for International Settlements, the notional value of such contracts now exceeds $600 trillion. Derivative contracts entail a certain amount of market risk, and banks will enter into them with customers who want to hedge interest rate positions only if the customers put up collateral, like the cash margin on a stock bought on credit. The market value, after netting for matching contracts that cancel each other out, is about $15 trillion. If the prices of Treasury securities fall sharply, the result will be a global margin call in the derivatives market, forcing the liquidation of vast amounts of positions. Something like this occurred between 6th of March and 18th of March 2020, when the yield on inflation-protected US Treasury securities, or TIPS, jumped from about negative 0.6% to positive 0.6% in just 2 weeks. The COVID-19 crash prompted a run on cash at American banks, as US corporate borrowers drew down their credit lines. US banks in turn cut credit lines to European and Japanese banks, who were forced to withdraw funding to their customers for currency hedges on holdings of US Treasury securities. The customers in turn liquidated US Treasury securities, and the Treasury market crashed. That was the first time that a Treasury market crash coincided with a stock market crash. Instead of acting as a crisis refuge, the US Treasury market became the epicenter of the crisis itself. The US Federal Reserve quickly stabilized the market through massive purchases of Treasury securities and through the extension of dollar swap lines to European central banks, which in turn restored dollar liquidity to their customers. The emergency actions were justified by the extraordinary circumstances of March of 2020. An external shock, namely the COVID-19 pandemic, upended financial markets, and the central bank acted responsibly in extending liquidity to the market. But the US Federal Reserve and the Biden administration now propose to extend these emergency measures into a continuing flood of demand. The consequences will be dire. The present situation is unprecedented in another way as well. Not in the past century has the United States faced a competitor with an economy as big as ours, growing much faster than ours in fact, with ambitions to displace us as the world's leading economic power. China believes that America's fiscal irresponsibility will undermine the dollar's status as the world's reserve currency.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
People who limit the Quran to worshipping and personal matters haven't understood it. This is a part of a speech delivered on April 14, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the annual Ramadan Quranic meeting. The speech was delivered via video conference with the participation of a number of prominent Quranic reciters.
God says, and guidance and glad tidings for those who believe. Chapter 2, verse 97. In another ayah, he says, a guide and a mercy to all who believe. Chapter 7, verse 52. And elsewhere, he says, as a guide and glad tidings to Muslims. Chapter 16, verse 102. And in other surah, he says, a guidance for people. There are different layers of guidance. A guidance for people means that it is available to everyone and that they can make the most of it. To those who fear God, and a guide and glad tidings for those who believe, clarify the different levels of guidance for people. These statements were about piety and the levels of guidance. In other ayahs, it is khashiyah, which is used to the criterion for benefiting from Quranic guidance. Again, this term is also related to piety. You can but admonish such a one as follows the message and fears the Lord, most gracious, unseen. Give such a one, therefore, good tidings of forgiveness and a reward most generous. Chapter 36, verse 11.
فيك الحب زاد عما العباد يا خير زاد رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان ليتك دوما قريب
Only those who fear God can benefit from Quranic guidance, and such guidance can only influence and assist these people. Another ayah in Holy Surah Taha says, Taha, we have not sent down the Quran to you to be for your distress, but only as an admonition to those who fear Allah. Chapter 20, verse 1 to 3. There are several other ayahs in the Quran which discuss the issue of fear of God. Fear of God is a characteristic of pious people. When we are pious, we fear God. Let me read this holy ayah. In the past, we granted to Moses and Aaron the criterion and a light and a message for the pious. Chapter 21, verse 48. What was given to Harun and Musa, greetings be upon them, was guidance and a message for the pious. Who are the pious? The Quran defines the pious, those who fear their Lord in their most secret thoughts. Therefore, piety and fear of God came together, and they are not studied separately. They are one single concept.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.